Part 1.
You are going to hear a report on a new way to find a flat or room to rent. First, look at the questions below. As you listen, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, from the possible options and mark it in the answer grid. The first one, 0, has been done for you as an example. You are going to hear the text twice. Do as much as you can the first time and complete your work the second time. Finally, you are going to have 30 seconds to finalize your answers. Now you have 90 seconds to study the sentences.
Now listen to the recording.
Now, you might have heard of speed dating, those events for the young, free and single who are just too busy to find the love of their lives. But what about applying the same principle to finding a lodger for your spare room? Natalie Steed went to experience speed flat mating.
Have you been to one of these events before, Rachel?
No. You've not. Okay, let's explain how it's all going to work.
I'll give you a room to rent list. That's everyone who's booked to attend, who has a room to rent. Runs in price order, so cheapest rooms at the start of the list, most expensive.
I can't afford to live with someone who depresses me, because it just affects your whole life. They're there all the time.
I can't feel my throat at all because I've been speaking for an hour solidly. I've been speed dating, and this is much tougher than speed dating, may I point out.
The old stock images of landlords like Rigsby is far from the truth these days. We tend to describe it to people as being far more like friends than rising damp.
We're in a basement club in the West End of London. The drink's flowing, the mirror ball is turning, and lots of numbers are being exchanged.
The garden's south facing, it's gorgeous in summer. Yeah. Obviously, I'm looking for somebody that likes cats.
I don't mind cats.
I used to work in an animal shelter, so
fantastic.
Yeah, they're particularly friendly. They'll come and sit on you, they won't leave you alone.
My name's Matt Hutchinson, and I'm with spareroom.co.uk. Basically, what we do is we have an evening that introduces people looking for places to live with people who've got a spare room in their house. And it's just a chance for people to meet the people that are involved rather than just see the flat. It's a chance to actually see who you'll be living with because it makes such a difference. And everybody who arrives gets a list of who's here. So if you're looking for a room, for example, you get a list of everybody who's got a room, what their area is, what the budget is. Everybody has a badge to say who they are and whether they've got a room or are looking.
You're wearing a white label, you've got a room to rent.
We both have a room to rent.
Oh, I see.
So we're seeking another person to join us.
Why are you looking for someone to move in?
Our magnificent German roommate, who is away every weekend, has moved out. So as a result, we're looking for someone equally magnificent who will be there as little as possible.
And have you seen this specimen of elusive magnificence yet?
In our dreams.
You're looking a little bit lost and you're wearing a pink badge. What does that mean?
That means I'm looking for a room, and also I'm willing to buddy up with someone else who's looking.
How long have you been looking for a room?
A couple of weeks. And I'm sort of new to the game, so I'm just trying to understand what's going on and how it works. you know, it's a bit of a shock and a bit of a steep learning curve for me.
Do you think you're pretty good at spotting the kind of person you can get on with?
Yes, it's, I think it's damn easy. You just know straight away.
When you've done it before, when you've done it through an online service, and you've presumably had people come to look at your house, how has that been?
Well, I must be a bit choosy, I suppose, but the two best lodgers I had, I just knew immediately. As soon as I looked at them, smiled at them, I knew that they were somehow the right sort of people and that we would get along.
So really, it's this kind of event's quite good for you, rather than sitting down with somebody where you know straight away you don't want to live with them, but they're in your house, you feel obliged to show them round.
Yes, because that's so embarrassing, having to show someone round. And when they're not interested, sometimes I open the door, and because I'm older, they look at me and go, oh God, I don't want to live with my mother.
In the last 12 months, we've seen a huge increase in people using Spare Room. The numbers have gone from about 400,000 registered users this time last year to just over 800,000 now, so the market's obviously growing really quickly. And by far the biggest increase is in people taking in a lodger. A lot of people in their early to mid-30s who've possibly bought a property 18 months to 2 years ago and just can't afford the mortgage repayments as things go up, or they have to remortgage and they're getting a much worse deal than they did. And getting somebody in is a great way of making a bit of extra cash and keeping your property. The government allows people to earn £4,250 a year tax-free by renting out a spare room.
So that's about £350 a month.
Yeah, exactly. And it just made a difference between having to move out of somewhere and keeping hold of it.
Okay. And it's two bedrooms. Yep. There's one bathroom, which is why I always ask people what time they get up in the morning. Because I do have a bad habit that I like to have a half an hour bath in the morning.
Okay. That's not a bad habit.
Other than that, I'm largely not in the house at all. I'm actually a little bit sort of brain dead from all the conversations I've had, but it's been so useful. It's a bit like being on the dating scene, in that you're interviewing people and seeing whether you get on with them, and it's actually very, very similar to actually finding a partner in some ways.
You seem to have to be quite open straight away. I mean, I heard you talking about your bathing habits earlier.
I think that's important. I mean, they're going to be living with you. They're going to be in really close contact, and it's best to come up with these things up front rather than have them move in and then discover your filthy habits. I think it is best to sort of just advertise yourself the way you are from the outset.
And have you had any firm interest yet? Because talking to people in the room, it seems to be very much a buyer's market.
I think both me and the friend I came with are finding this as well. It used to be that if you wanted a room, it was gone within hours of it being advertised. But I have met several people that I'd like to follow it up with, several people that I feel I could live with.
How's it going?
Well, what I've done is written all my details on my lapel, and I wander up and present that to people, demand that they read it. And if they weigh me in the balance and find me wanting that way, at least it stops a long conversation from starting.
So have you had any long conversations so far?
No, I'm working the room insanely.
Best of luck.
Thank you. Are you sure you don't need a place?
Well, I remember one flatmate I shared with for a year without ever seeing her without makeup and high heel shoes. Let us know your experience of shared accommodation, good or bad. 0800 044 044 or email through the BBC website, bbc.co.uk/radio4/you and yours. And you'll also find details of our podcast on that last item on sharing of data, patient data on that website.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work.
Listen to the recording again.
Now, you might have heard of speed dating, those events for the young, free and single who are just too busy to find the love of their lives. But what about applying the same principle to finding a lodger for your spare room? Natalie Steed went to experience speed flat mating.
Have you been to one of these events before, Rachel?
No. You've not. Okay, let's explain how it's all going to work.
I'll give you a room to rent list. That's everyone who's booked to attend who has a room to rent. Runs in price order, so cheapest rooms at the start of the list, most expensive.
I can't afford to live with someone who depresses me, because it just affects your whole life. They're there all the time.
I can't feel my throat at all, because I speak for the hour solidly. I've been speed dating, and this is much tougher than speed dating, may I point out.
The old stock images of landlords like Rigsby is far from the truth these days. We tend to describe it to people as being far more like friends than rising damp.
We're in a basement club in the West End of London. The drink's flowing, the mirror ball is turning, and lots of numbers are being exchanged.
The garden's south-facing, it's gorgeous in summer. Yeah. Obviously, I'm looking for somebody that likes cats.
I don't mind cats.
I used to work in an animal shelter, so
oh, fantastic.
Yeah, they're particularly friendly. They'll come and sit on you. They won't leave you alone.
My name's Matt Hutchinson, and I'm with spareroom.co.uk. Basically, what we do is we have an evening that introduces people looking for places to live with people who've got a spare room in their house. And it's just a chance for people to meet the people that are involved rather than just see the flat. It's a chance to actually see who you'll be living with, because it makes such a difference. And everybody who arrives gets a list of who's here. So if you're looking for a room, for example, you get a list of everybody who's got a room, what their area is, what the budget is. Everybody has a badge to say who they are and whether they've got a room or are looking.
You're wearing a white label, you've got a room to rent.
We both have a room to rent.
Oh, I see.
So we're seeking another person to join us.
Why are you looking for someone to move in?
Our magnificent German roommate, who is away every weekend, has moved out. So as a result, we're looking for someone equally magnificent who will be there as little as possible.
And have you seen this specimen of elusive magnificence yet?
In our dreams.
You're looking a little bit lost and you're wearing a pink badge. What does that mean?
That means I'm looking for a room, and also I'm willing to buddy up with someone else who's looking.
How long have you been looking for a room?
A couple of weeks. And I'm sort of new to the game, so I'm just trying to understand what's going on and how it works. You know, it's a bit of a shock and a bit of a steep learning curve for me.
Do you think you're pretty good at spotting the kind of person you can get on with?
Yes, I think it's damn easy. You just know straight away.
When you've done it before, when you've done it through an online service, and you've presumably had people come to look at your house, how has that been?
Well, I must be a bit choosy, I suppose, but the two best lodgers I had, I just knew immediately. As soon as I looked at them, smiled at them, I knew that they were somehow the right sort of people and that we would get along.
So really, it's this kind of event's quite good for you, rather than sitting down with somebody where you know straight away you don't want to live with them, but they're in your house, you feel obliged to show them round.
Yes, because that's so embarrassing, having to show someone round when they're not interested. Sometimes I open the door, and because I'm older, they look at me and go, oh God, I don't want to live with my mother.
In the last 12 months, we've seen a huge increase in people using Spare Room. The numbers have gone from about 400,000 registered users this time last year to just over 800,000 now, so the market's obviously growing really quickly. And by far the biggest increase is in people taking in a lodger. A lot of people in their early to mid-30s who've possibly bought a property 18 months to 2 years ago and just can't afford the mortgage repayments as things go up, or they have to remortgage and they're getting a much worse deal than they did. And getting somebody in is a great way of making a bit of extra cash and keeping your property. The government allows people to earn £4,250 a year tax-free by renting out a spare room.
So that's about £350 a month?
Yeah, exactly. And it just made the difference between having to move out of somewhere and keeping hold of it.
Okay, and it's two bedrooms. Yes. There's one bathroom, which is why I always ask people what time they get up in the morning. Because I do have a bad habit that I like to have a half an hour bath in the morning.
Okay. That's not a bad habit.
But other than that, I'm largely not in the house at all. I'm actually a little bit sort of brain dead from all the conversations I've had, but it's been so, so useful. It's a bit like being on the dating scene, in that you're interviewing people and seeing whether you get on with them, and it's actually very, very similar to actually finding a partner in some ways.
You seem to have to be quite open straight away. I mean, I heard you talking about your bathing habits earlier.
I think that's important. I mean, they're going to be living with you. They're going to be in really close contact. And it's best to come up with these things up front rather than have them move in and then discover your filthy habits. I think it is best to sort of just advertise yourself the way you are from the outset.
And have you had any firm interest yet? Because it seems, talking to people in the room, it seems to be very much a buyer's market.
I think both me and the friend I came with are finding this as well. It used to be that if you wanted a room, it was gone within hours of it being advertised. But I have met several people that I'd like to follow it up with, several people that I feel I could live with.
How's it going?
Well, what I've done is written all my details on my lapel, and I wander up and present that to people, demand that they read it. And if they weigh me in the balance and find me wanting that way, at least it stops a long conversation from starting.
So have you had any long conversations so far?
No, I'm working the room insanely.
Best of luck.
Thank you. Are you sure you don't need a place?
Well, I remember one flatmate I shared with for a year without ever seeing her without makeup and high-heeled shoes. Let us know your experience of shared accommodation, good or bad. 0800 044 044, or email through the BBC website, bbc.co.uk/radio4/you and yours. And you'll also find details of our podcast on that last item on sharing of data, patient data, on that website.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work. This is the end of part one.
Part two. You are going to hear a text about language learning. First, look at the questions below. As you listen, give short answers to each numbered question, 1 through 10. The first one, 0, has been done for you as an example. You are going to hear the text twice. Do as much as you can the first time, and complete your work the second time. Finally, you are going to have 30 seconds to finalize your answers. Now you have 60 seconds to study the questions below.
Now listen to the recording.
You may not be aware of it, but 2005 has been designated the Year of Foreign Language Study here in the U.S. If your application to Berlitz is still pending, you're not alone. Despite our polyglot origins, less than 10% of Americans can speak anything other than their native tongue fluently, and English speakers are notoriously monolingual. By contrast, a recent European Union survey shows that about half of all European citizens speak another language, and 8 out of 10 students are conversational in at least one foreign language. For much of the world, the second language of choice is English, often described as the language of opportunity, and that's part of the reason that English speakers often don't go to the trouble to learn anything else. But in some neighborhoods in New York, Miami, or Los Angeles, por favor or gracias can take you a lot further than please and thank you. Some immigrants to the United States find Spanish, Korean, Mandarin, or Hindi more useful than English, at least at first. Joining us now is Rosemary Fayal. She's executive director of the Modern Language Association. She's with us from NPR's Bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So why would some immigrants start picking up a Korean, Spanish, or Mandarin before they learned English?
Well, you know, that's like a lot of what goes on in the rest of the world, where many languages coexist in one nation, and people have to use a common language that's not their native language to communicate with one another. One thing I think that all immigrants to the United States have in common, though, is the need and, in fact, the desire to learn English eventually so that they can function fully in American society. Mm-hmm. But, of course, immigrants are very pragmatic, and if learning Spanish is the way to get a job and keep a job, that's what they'll do.
And if you're a Spanish speaker and get a job at working for Hindi, you might learn that language first.
Exactly. I think many of us who live in New York have the experience of riding in a taxi and questioning the driver where he or she is from, and hearing one language and then trying out another with the driver, and by the time the ride is done, you've had a little bit of a conversation in maybe 5 to 10 languages.
As you're stammering around trying to find something in common that you can communicate with.
That's right.
But Spanish, of course, is far and away the leading second language in the United States for obvious reasons. But has that always been the case?
It has not always been the case, but it is true that in the most recent census, the following information stands out. 82% of people over the age of 5 speak English in the home in the United States. Of the remaining approximately 18% who speak a language other than English, 60% of those speak Spanish. Naturally, at earlier times in American history, other languages were dominant. I come from a family of Italian and German speakers, and I know many of the listeners can name the heritage languages that their grandparents and great-grandparents came to the country with, and it won't always be Spanish in the majority of the cases.
Mm-hmm. What determines which second language, if you will, an American chooses to learn or feels the necessity to learn?
The research that we do at the Modern Language Association shows us several things, and in speaking with my colleagues who are language teachers like myself, I hear a lot of reasons. In fact, I often say that there are as many reasons individuals have to learn a language as there are languages. The primary thing that connects them is students want to understand a different language, a different culture, and they know that learning those languages opens those doors to new opportunities. Sometimes they will pick a language entirely for vocational reasons. For example, if you want to work in the medical profession in San Francisco, and you know that you will have many speakers of Spanish, of Korean, of Tagalog come into your medical setting, it would be a wonderful addition to your skills to have at least one of those languages. Another reason that students give is they want to learn the language of their grandparents or their great-grandparents, or perhaps they want to further a language that they've already heard in the home. So they'll take the heritage language in either the high school, if it's offered, or in the post-secondary school, college or university, where a great variety of lesser commonly taught languages are offered. And finally, I think a lot of language students simply want to expand their educational experience and acquire a deeper humanistic view of their studies. Languages are a part of the traditional liberal arts curriculum, and so I think students want to expand their learning in that way, in the same way they might take history or archaeology or biology.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work.
Listen to the recording again.
You may not be aware of it, but 2005 has been designated the Year of Foreign Language Study here in the U.S. If your application to Berlitz is still pending, you're not alone. Despite our polyglot origins, less than 10% of Americans can speak anything other than their native tongue fluently, and English speakers are notoriously monolingual. By contrast, a recent European Union survey shows that about half of all European citizens speak another language, and 8 out of 10 students are conversational in at least one foreign language. For much of the world, the second language of choice is English, often described as the language of opportunity, and that's part of the reason that English speakers often don't go to the trouble to learn anything else. But in some neighborhoods in New York, Miami, or Los Angeles, por favor or gracias can take you a lot further than please and thank you. Some immigrants to the United States find Spanish, Korean, Mandarin, or Hindi more useful than English, at least at first. Joining us now is Rosemary Fayal. She's executive director of the Modern Language Association. She's with us from NPR's Bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So why would some immigrants start picking up a Korean, Spanish, or Mandarin before they learned English?
Well, you know, that's like a lot of what goes on in the rest of the world, where many languages coexist in one nation, and people have to use a common language that's not their native language to communicate with one another. One thing I think that all immigrants to the United States have in common, though, is the need and, in fact, the desire to learn English eventually so that they can function fully in American society. Mm-hmm. But, of course, immigrants are very pragmatic, and if learning Spanish is the way to get a job and keep a job, that's what they'll do.
And if you're a Spanish speaker and get a job at working for Hindi, you might learn that language first.
Exactly. I think many of us who live in New York have the experience of riding in a taxi and questioning the driver where he or she is from, and hearing one language and then trying out another with the driver, and by the time the ride is done, you've had a little bit of a conversation in maybe 5 to 10 languages.
As you're stammering around trying to find something in common that you can communicate with.
That's right.
But Spanish, of course, is far and away the leading second language in the United States for obvious reasons. But has that always been the case?
It has not always been the case, but it is true that in the most recent census, the following information stands out. 82% of people over the age of 5 speak English in the home in the United States. Of the remaining approximately 18% who speak a language other than English, 60% of those speak Spanish. Naturally, at earlier times in American history, other languages were dominant. I come from a family of Italian and German speakers, and I know many of the listeners can name the heritage languages that their grandparents and great-grandparents came to the country with, and it won't always be Spanish in the majority of the cases.
Mm-hmm. What determines which second language, if you will, an American chooses to learn or feels the necessity to learn?
The research that we do at the Modern Language Association shows us several things, and in speaking with my colleagues who are language teachers like myself, I hear a lot of reasons. In fact, I often say that there are as many reasons individuals have to learn a language as there are languages. The primary thing that connects them is students want to understand a different language, a different culture, and they know that learning those languages opens those doors to new opportunities. Sometimes they will pick a language entirely for vocational reasons. For example, if you want to work in the medical profession in San Francisco, and you know that you will have many speakers of Spanish, of Korean, of Tagalog come into your medical setting, it would be a wonderful addition to your skills to have at least one of those languages. Another reason that students give is they want to learn the language of their grandparents or their great-grandparents, or perhaps they want to further a language that they've already heard in the home. So they'll take the heritage language in either the high school, if it's offered, or in the post-secondary school, college or university, where a great variety of lesser commonly taught languages are offered. And finally, I think a lot of language students simply simply want to expand their educational experience and acquire a deeper humanistic view of their studies. Languages are a part of the traditional liberal arts curriculum, and so I think students want to expand their learning in that way, in the same way they might take history or archaeology or biology.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work.
This is the end of the second part.